everyone, and welcome back to the Necklander Watchcast. And a very happy trick-or-treat, a very happy Halloween, a very happy October to all who celebrate Vinnie Caravella.
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's great. You know, I've shared my thoughts on Halloween here. I respect the holiday. I don't necessarily...
Adhere to tradition.
That's right. I'm an old school... old school dresses the ghouls and the ghosts so they won't take your soul and drag you away to hell. No, like, I respect the fun that is had, but I'm not a candy person. Also, I'm not necessarily a dress up person, but I really enjoy seeing people have fun from the outside. Come to the door and I'm like, and they're happy and they're getting candy and they, maybe like when adults are coming to the door or like when they hit like 15 or 16, I'm like, you know, it's time to. There's a window here where you should be having your own party, not trick-or-treating.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, Brad Shoemaker is not with us this week. He is still in North Carolina. I do believe power has been restored at this time, but he is still dealing with family stuff, so we're happy to hear that. But we have a very special guest for our film this week, Trick or Treat. Patrick Klepek, the greatest evangelist I know for this particular film. How's it going, man?
Alex invited me on a bit last minute, and I said, hey, you know, I don't know if I'll be able to have a chance to rewatch the whole film, but I've seen it a million times. I should be fine. Alex, I'd watched the whole film.
it's a short watch, to be fair.
That did help that when I hit pause on it, I was like, an hour 22? That means credits is like an hour 15. Like, that's... I mean, VHS, the new sci-fi one, like, that's pushing 2 hours. Plus, once I start this movie, what am I going to do? Stop it?
Yeah, no, you gotta watch the whole thing. So you are the reason that I saw this film originally, because I'd seen you had talked about it a few times, and then also I'd seen it on your various Shocktober lists and whatnot. And I'd heard sort of the buzz around, hey, this is a really great kind of modern-ish version of like a horror anthology film. And I finally watched it, I think during the pandemic, actually, is when I watched it for the first time. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really neat. I'm kind of surprised this didn't become more of a thing or get more popular or, you know, get an actual theatrical release like ever. And after reading up on it, I still don't really know why that is.
It's weird. Yeah, the history of Trick or Treat is bizarre because it was produced by Legendary. They've done... the Godzilla films and a whole bunch of other, they do a lot of genre fare. They've got started in a lot of genre fare. Heavy on the horror stuff. This movie gets made. Warner Brothers was the company that was supposed to distribute it. And they basically just sat on it for 2 years. And then there was a kind of a campaign by people who had seen it behind the scenes. Like, ain't it cool news? Bad website.
Harry Knowles fucking sucks. But he did run those Butnumathon festivals, which were, by all accounts, like fairly fun film festivals to go to if you can get past the whole ain't it cool news aspect of it. And that is where the film made its debut.
And then there was sort of a fan campaign with like these isolated screenings that finally never got it out the door for a theatrical. So if you saw it in a theater, you know, a decade plus ago, you saw it because of a special screening. And then eventually... Yeah. It hits, you know, DVD and has taken on, like, it's really cult status, but, like, you go into a, you know, the definition of has something hit, can you find merch at the Spirit Halloween?
Yeah.
And you'll find this little guy everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he has been pervasive, and a sequel has been in quote, development for as long as this movie has been out, but nothing has come to fruition. And, like, having revisited it, I don't know that I even, at a certain point, that's all I ever wanted. Mm-hmm. And now it's this weird little thing that I would be reluctant to even revisit that world.
I feel like now if you do it and that sequel does any kind of numbers, you are looking at a situation where there is now like 3 seasons of a streaming Trick or Treat where Sam is sort of the connective tissue between all the different stories. You are looking at like a bunch of like shitty, like decade specific sequels that come around. Like, you're turning this into like VHS or Fear Street or something like that. And I don't know that it needs that, because I think it's just like a neat little standalone fable. It's pretty damn good.
Well, anthologies are hard, right? Like, anthologies themselves, like, are difficult. I think part of what makes Trick or Treat work as well as it does is that it does the thing that most anthologies avoid, which is try to find a connective tissue between everything.
Yeah, and interlocking those stories.
It's very light. It's not, you know, they all still stand on their own, but they're like really fun nods and sort of like, oh, that was happening when that was happening in a way that goes beyond the normal anthology framework, which is you either have your Tales from the Crypt, where you get sort of a moderator of sorts that introduces a separate story, or Creepshow, right? It's like different comic books that like you're opening up, and it's like different pages or stories in a comic, but it's all very loose. It's an excuse to play in a short story format and then find some framing that allows it all to come together. Part, I think, what makes this movie special is that it goes the extra mile to feel like there's just a little bit more happening between all the stories.
Yeah. Now, Vinny, you had never seen this before, correct?
Nope, never seen it.
Top line, what'd you think?
I thought it was less campy than I thought than I was maybe hoping it would be, but not as visceral's not the right word. It's a little more timid than I think I thought it was going to be, a little more straight horror, but it's not.
It's like storybook horror.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Like storybook
like it has
horror.
That kind of feel to it.
Yeah, it's like it does very much feel like a more modern mid-2000s Creepshow, you know, like they got rid of the cheese, and it's like, oh, okay, they're not morality tales necessarily. The Creepshow is a little more of like don't have sex or you're die.
There's a little of that here too, though. It's mostly just like, hey, don't be a serial killer or you'll die.
So I think that little kid or whatever it is awesome. The mascot is
Sam.
Sam is great design, creepy. I kind of wish was more in it, or at least showed up some more places. But yeah, it's an anthology. Like any anthology, there are ones that are like, that was a really good one, and ones that are like, that's a little slow, or this one.
Yeah, that one didn't fully hit.
Yeah.
Well, so we mentioned a little bit about how this movie came into release. I should say this is probably the first film we have done where I actually could not figure out a specific release year to assign to this thing. Like, depending on what website you go to, it is either a 2007, 2008, or 2009 movie because of the stuff we just talked about. But so what little research I was able to do, the only thing I could find as far as like why maybe this movie never actually made it in theaters, it's two things. One, they were originally planning on putting it out in October of 2007. That is also the month that Warner Brothers was putting out Saw 4. So they may have just decided to hedge their bets on Saw 4 and say, we don't want to put out two different horror movies that might compete with one another. The other thing is that the only kind of unfortunate thing I feel like about this movie is that it unfortunately does have the stink of Bryan Singer on it. He is the producer of this film, and the writer-director Michael Dougherty got his start, well, he got his start doing animation for Nickelodeon on stuff like Blue's Clues, but his early screenplays were as co-writer on X2 and the extremely not popular Superman Returns. And there's also some thinking that maybe because he was associated with this and Singer was associated with this, as a result of Superman Returns the previous year dying at the box office, they just didn't want to take a gamble on it anymore.
I did not know this didn't get a... I had heard of this movie. I did not know it didn't have a theatrical release.
So they did finally do one, but it was in 2022. That was the first time they actually gave it like a slightly wide theatrical release. It might have even been as like one of those like weird, what are those like events they do at theaters where it's like, hey, we're doing a 1 week screening of this thing or whatever. It might have been like that.
By that point, it's probably like, hey, all of you fans of Trick or Treat, right? Like,
yeah, you know what you're getting yourself into, probably.
Come have a Rocky Horror Picture Show style. Like, let's all make an event out of it. Come and wear your pumpkin head or your sack over your head and let's go watch a movie.
And the original like impetus for this thing was an animated short that Dougherty made back in 1996 called Season's Greetings, which also featured the Sam character, though not as a pumpkin demon. It was a kid who was wearing footy pajamas and like the big burlap sack head, but he was being stalked by a stranger on a Halloween night. So is that the origin of Sam or what? I actually haven't seen the short, but that is what started this thing along. And then like 10 years later, here comes the movie.
Okay.
And then a couple of our actors here also have a specific, let's just say attachment to specifically the X-Men aspect of the Bryan Singer and Dougherty stuff. Because Brian Cox is in X2 as William Stryker.
Right.
And Anna Paquin, as we know, is Rogue in the original X trilogy.
Yep.
Another one that got cast here, not on the merits of anything related to Bryan Singer or X-Men, was Dylan Baker as Stephen Wilkins, the high school principal slash serial killer. And he got this part. I mean, he did have another Marvel thing. He was Kirk Connors in the Raimi Spider-Man movies, but he got this part on the merits of another movie. Patrick, you've probably seen this movie, I'm guessing. Vinny, maybe not, but maybe you know the reputation of it. You ever see Happiness, the Todd Solondz movie?
Oh, have I seen Happiness? I am familiar with the
you
name.
You would remember if you saw Happiness. Let me tell you.
Let me look up a movie poster.
Because you would be upset right now for me bringing it up.
Well, yeah, what was it about?
It's about the suburbs, but it's also about the most fucked up people on Earth living in the suburbs.
Oh, okay. I'm looking this up now. Yes. Did I see this? This is Philip Seymour Hoffman, right?
Yes, he is in this. Jane Addams, who we saw in Twin Peaks: The Return, she is also in that.
Gosh, I can't think of anything specific from it, but I do remember this movie.
Okay, so Dylan Baker is one of the main characters in that movie, which is a deeply upsetting film in a lot of different ways. And one of the most upsetting parts is Dylan Baker's part in that movie, where he plays a very milquetoast suburban dad who is also realizing he is a pedophile.
Oh, okay.
So he's a monster in that movie, too, just a slightly different flavor of it. But Dougherty had seen that movie somewhat recently around the time he was casting this. And he's like, Dylan Baker is my serial killer.
I mean, he does have in this movie, he does have good, like, could be a monster energy.
When
he's like all
from
right,
the second
all right,
he
guys.
Shows up, yeah.
And good principal energy. Yeah. Again, this movie, I'm not talking about Happiness.
That's a whole other energy, let me tell you.
Yeah.
His smile that he puts on has a real menace behind it in a way that really helps the part that he's selling, twists and all.
Yeah, his entire energy is sinister dentist. Like that is what he puts forth into the world. Just a couple of other quick casting notes I just want to mention here. Brett Kelly is the curly-haired bully character that's breaking all the different pumpkins during his little sequence. Yeah. That's the kid from Bad Santa.
Okay.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Last one, Rochelle Ates plays one of the ladies that is hanging out with Anna Paquin in this movie, one of her sisters. That's Rochelle from Left 4 Dead.
Zombies. Holy shit. They're real. Okay, now I'm killing zombies.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I did not know her from anything else. That was just like, oh, she's one of the main people in Left 4 Dead.
Wait, in Left 4 Dead?
Yeah.
Like the game?
Yeah. She does the voices for one of the playable characters, Rochelle.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Voices. They do talk. You remember that, don't you?
This is also that era, right? This is right around Left 4 Dead, Left 4 Dead.
I think Left 4 Dead was 2 years after this.
I had to run through a quick second there of this time period's zombie stuff. And I was like, maybe he means Walking Dead.
No.
Which I didn't really see. Maybe he means any of the other zombie things.
No. Left 4 Dead. Okay, and I mean Left 4 Dead because those characters also appeared in Resident Evil 6 as DLC, and she also voiced that. So
okay. Gotta come back.
Yeah.
Okay. And she's just Rochelle?
She's just Rochelle, yeah.
Okay, big leap there. All right.
Yeah. But that's, we'll talk about some of our other cast members as we go along here, but we might as well just kind of get into the meat of this thing, which is, it's like candy. These stories, they're short, they're simple, they're to the point. There's a little bit of mythos and backstory that come into some of them. But, the big hook here is that all these stories take place over the course of a single Halloween night in a fictional town in Ohio that definitely feels a little bit like Haddonfield, Illinois, maybe a cross between that and Salem, Massachusetts or something. It feels like all of Halloween is converging on this particular small town. They have a parade and everything.
Werewolves, zombies, and demons of every variety. They've all descended on the normally sleepy town of Warren Valley, Ohio, where the holiday and all of its strange traditions are taken very seriously. It's only 8 o'clock and the streets are already packed with costume visitors, some to show off, others to blend in, but all to celebrate the magical night of Halloween. The one night a year when we can pretend to be the scariest thing we can think of.
And we are introduced to the horrors that await, with the last thing that actually happens chronologically in the story, which is this married couple getting home after some Halloween revelry and the wife being like, I'm taking all this shit down. I'm done with Halloween.
I think
and the husband just
coming,
being
right?
like, no, you're going to break tradition.
Wait, wait, not yet.
What?
You're supposed to keep it lit.
Why?
Ancient tradition?
Henry, it's Halloween, not Hanukkah. Baby, I'm lit, and you're lit.
Honey,
your little friend here, this night's over.
You know, you should be more careful. There are rules. You might have said someone.
Oh, please. Who?
Which I will say I love as a conceit. Like, no, look, you got to take this stuff seriously. I do really enjoy that in a spooky movie where it's just like, look, I know it's goofy, but let's just keep it up. Like, it's probably we probably keep these things lit for a reason. And like, there's all these stories. I know. But let's just do it. I do like that premise of, look, we've modernized, we've done all these things, but we've lost the reason why we keep the jack-o'-lantern lit, but we should still keep it lit because why risk it?
Yeah, the demons are out there, the ghosts are out there, and this is all part of the tradition of, you know, Samhain, Halloween, whatever you want to call it, and this wife is just not interested, and she just wants to take this fucking robot costume off and just get to sleep and go watch their porno tape.
Please, there was it like
nature documentary
or whatever it is. Yeah. Well, and I think part of what like this opener establishes, which I think is part of what makes Trick or Treat special, is that it feels grounded. And part of the way it gets away with that is it's not all supernatural. Like there's a real mean streak in Trick or Treat. Like Vinny brought it up earlier, where often in horror, often in anthologies, there'll be like some comeuppance, some justice. I mean, a lot of innocents will die along the way, but there is sort of a aha. Even if, as you pointed out, like it, horror, as transgressive as it can be sometimes, has a real regressive streak when it comes to sex. It's like, well, you shouldn't do that. but here it's part of the, I think the real appeal is that it feels like a real place, feels like real people, and there's a heightened reality to all of it. And the fact that it shifts between the supernatural and then also just there are bad people out there doing bad things is, I think, it's a real unique element to it because these things either pick a lane. Either we're grounded, real people doing bad stuff, or ghosts and goblins and things of that nature.
Yeah, it's a total swirling of like all the different things that can kind of, you know, be associated with Halloween. And yeah, in this case, like this woman who is eventually brutally murdered by Sam because, you know, she took her decorations down too fast. Like, she didn't really do anything bad. She just did not adhere to tradition in the way that this movie is setting up these Halloween traditions. And as a result, because Sam happened to see her doing it, it's like, well, time to kill her.
She might get it the worst out of anyone in the movie. Like, she really, I mean,
well, we don't
some
see what happens to the old man at the very end, but we can assume that might be worse.
Or the kids in the quarry. Like, they do leave some stuff to your imagination, but we do get to see what happens to her, and it ain't great.
No,
Jim.
And those kids see what happened to her, and they go running screaming because holy shit.
She basically gets dismembered and also gets a lollipop to the face.
Lollipop to the face to start, and then he just takes her apart after that and uses her as the brainy Halloween decorations. I will say one of my favorite little subtle bits of direction is that they keep focusing in and out on the fake dangling arms that are like, you know, like dangling off the trees. So when they finally do that with her actual arm, it is like kind of a nice little tease of like, oh shit, okay, yes, I know what you're doing here, but I'm ready for it when it happens. And it's like, it's a pretty good reveal when they finally pull that sheet off and her head is just there.
Yeah, I mean, you see it coming.
Oh yeah,
but they have fun with it in the beginning too, because she is dramatically ripping the sheets off of all the other you know, things there with a flourish, right? Where you're just like, what's gonna be here? What's gonna be here? Until the time that she gets her with like blinking lights reveal, also like, hey, dead body here. Don't take your Halloween. Don't put that many Halloween decorations up, first of all, because you're asking for trouble. But then leave them up. You're gonna commit.
Oh, come on. There's nothing wrong with having that many. It's just like,
are you coming at me?
Yeah.
Do you feel a little under threat right now? Do you feel
like, yeah, I'm thinking, yeah. Like, should I go outside and count what's in my front yard?
I mean, she had a lot. I mean, those ghosts were pretty cool, but that's a lot.
Yeah. They're like ghost scarecrows.
Yeah, those ghost scarecrows, that was a lot. But then if you're you got to take them down, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
Well, to do in one night, too.
Yeah.
You just be like me and you just don't take the skeletons. Just
yeah.
Leave them up.
Yeah.
He's guarding your yard.
If it's the beginning of September and I can see Christmas items going up at the Walgreens, well, then I can keep my Halloween skeleton up all year long. I feel like that is just tit for tat.
Yes. You are well within your rights. and especially as a homeowner, this is your choice.
HOA here.
Yeah. I was going to say, I would assume there's no HOA there. Like truly the most terrifying thing that could descend on anyone's house.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I like about this movie in general, and it's set up a little bit here, is I always enjoy a Halloween with generic costumes because that's just not how Halloween is anymore. So no. Robots, pirates, witches, you know, zombies, vampires. Now it's all like Spider-Man, Iron Man, very
Squid
much like
Squid Game.
Squid Game, Minion, inflatable dinosaur. But probably branded somewhere. So I do enjoy like a good old like, oh yes, what are you? You're a pirate. You're a robot. You're some kind of a fairy thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like it's just also as someone who has to like now play the, all right, what do you guys want to be for Halloween? And it's like, can't you just be a pirate? And they're like, no, I want to be Phoenix Wright from the and be like, all right, this is very specific.
Pirates are old news, Dad.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's all Sonic the Hedgehog now.
Yeah, but this version of Sonic.
Yeah.
And even in this opening, I think part of what it establishes, which continues throughout the rest of the film, is it's not overly gory, right?
No. There's blood, but that's it.
There's blood. Like, it saves its punches, you know, like for like the sequence at the end with all the sisters, like, where it's more, like, what's shocking is what's implied in this intro. And then when it does do something that is kind of an effect, like with the reveal with the serial killer in the head later on, like it gets to have that moment where like it's going to turn the dial a little bit up because it feels out of character with the rest of the film, where it's more of a tense film than is a scary film. And even then it's not overly relying. And like, I like a good practical effect as much as anybody, but this movie is relying on more than that. And I think it's a huge part of why it has staying power, because it's not just like, oh, the gore hounds of the world are like, oh, I wonder how they did that, or I like how that looks. Like, a lot of what works here is really clever editing, staging, and just like a brutally efficient and effective storytelling.
Yeah, and I think the next story, which is the serial killer story, the principal story, is pretty good example of that, because you know kind of what's coming. As soon as Dylan Baker opens his mouth, you pretty much know that like there's something more sinister going on there. But the way that they tease out exactly what is going on there, I think is pretty expertly done. Because even if you know he's a killer, like the way that they set up the bully character who is like breaking up all the pumpkins and just being a general asshole and stealing candy and all that stuff, like that stuff's pretty good, but you know he's going to die. You don't know how he's going to die. Is Sam going to come get him or whatever, but you know he's going to die. Soon as they get bringing the principal character, you know this dude's up to no good.
Smashing jack-o'-lanterns, stealing candy. It's okay. Believe it or not, I was just like you when I was a kid. Till my dad set me straight, that is. See, my dad taught me tonight is about respecting the dead. Because this is the one night that the dead and all sorts of other things roam free and pay us a visit. Sorry. All these traditions, jack-o'-lanterns, putting on costumes, handing out treats, they were started to protect us, but nowadays, no one really cares. I didn't do such a good job, did I? What do you think? Hey.
Okay. Need a root beer?
Wait. That's right. There's another tradition. Very important.
Always check your candy.
And then as soon as that kid just starts vomiting insane amounts of chocolate, You're
is
like
it chocolate or blood?
I think it's chocolate and blood is what it's supposed to be.
As someone who's colorblind, I often have to turn to my wife and be like, "Is it red? Is it red or what?" And she's like, "It's really dark. I can't quite see." Until they go in the house and be like, "Oh no, that's red. He's got blood on him."
Yeah,
because I wasn't sure. This is maybe darker than the movie wants to get. I wasn't sure. Was he supposed to be like feeding him razor blades inside of his chocolate
or
anything
poison.
Like that? Just poison. Okay. Yeah, because that might be just me mapping some of my childhood Halloween check your candy thing.
Well, I mean, later on, there's literally an X-Acto knife inside a candy bar. That's like what Sam is wielding
right.
at one point. So
yeah, but that's not what happened here. He's not getting his insides cut up. Okay, this is
no.
Just
I think
some
he would have. I think if he had done that, his mouth would have started bleeding immediately. So
okay, we'll move on.
But so when he finally knocks this kid out and starts dragging him into the house, which is, you know, you're like, okay, this is going to be a slapstick bit of can the serial killer successfully hide this ungainly 12-year-old body while both trick-or-treaters and his own son are constantly haranguing him.
Daddy! I'm back from trick-or-treating!
Billy, shh! Please, be quiet.
Why?
Because you'll bother the neighbors. Now go watch Charlie Brown. And I'll be in a minute.
Charlie Brown's an asshole.
Billy Wilkins. Language.
And I think that stuff plays out about as funny as anything in this movie is.
Maybe a little long with the burial part, but it makes more sense later on.
Yeah, it makes more sense later on. And also, I just think Dylan Baker is absolutely hamming it up exactly the way he needs to. Like with the interruption of the old man, throwing the finger at the dog and all that stuff. Like him just having to like constantly kick this burlap sacked kid in the face over and over again to keep them from whimpering. Like it's grim, but it's just so ridiculous.
Who? Okay. Trick or treat experts. Mm-hmm. Who's in the sack?
The kid.
No, it can't be because the kid's in the basement that we learn later on.
Well, the head is.
Yeah. So who's in the, the body can't be reaching out.
He could have taken, there is a cut that happens after the old man goes inside and the kid finally, his son stops haranguing him from the window about going trick-or-treating and carving a jack-o'-lantern. There is a cut between when the kid is knocked out in the hole and when he is done burying it.
Yeah, but then how does he get the head?
He could have brought the head inside at some point. We don't see it.
That's a good point. You know what? You're poking holes in a story that I haven't.
I think the kid is like, come inside. I want to do that. I need help with the
help
eyes.
Help me with the eyes. Help
and then he's
the
like,
eyes.
And then he kind of just is like, okay. I mean, look, he's got another body in there too. So we don't know what he's been up to.
Yeah. Maybe this was another kid. He was just keeping around for like, you know, a rainy day.
this guy seems to have a lot of free time as what it seems to be a single dad running around. So I don't know. That's the most unbelievable thing in this entire movie is how much free time this dad seems to have to go murder
people. I don't think he's a great dad. I don't think he's around a lot.
He's probably not a great dad.
No. No, because as we learn, when he finally goes inside, and by the way, the old man here, Brian Cox, after they have a little bit of an argument later on, he sees him in the window banging on it, being like, help me. We'll come back to that later. But when he goes inside, you know, the kid's like, all right, let's go carve the jack-o'-lantern. And dad's got that knife behind his back the whole time. Like, oh, is this kid going to get it too?
Yeah.
Nope. He's raising Chucky, folks. He is raising his own little serial killer who is very excited to start carving the eyes out of this child's head, an actual child's head.
I can see why we'd need help with the eyes. The eyes are always tough. Yeah.
Part of what I think really works well about this is my favorite type of jump scare is the one that you know is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so much work gets done rather than the really cheap jump scare where, you know, you get the violins and something pops out of nowhere and there's a loud noise. Like, that's easy. And that can be fun. It can be effective. But, like, the best kinds of jump scares are where, you know, we're slowly leaning into something. You know it's coming. And you scare yourself in to the jump scare along the way. And so here, I think what's really clever about the story is you're right. The moment, like, from the jump, things are off. Like,
yeah.
And you think as the audience, like, I get it. I understand the twist. Like, the fun of this is going to be, as you said, the slapstick nature of it all. And the weight of this scene is going to be how much can this actor lean into that? And he carries it. I think absent the extra twist, it's weaker. Mm-hmm. But like, it's still a lot of fun, even if it goes on for a little bit, you know, too long. But what it does is, like, it lulls you in the same way that, like, you're anticipating the jumps. You're like, okay, I know what the twist is. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole point is going to be like, when does it happen or how does he get caught? So they're able to then like hide this other twist behind their back with the kid being in on it, all the way down to that final shot where like the knife comes down, it's squishy and it's gross, and you
think he might have actually
stabbed his kid. And then they the reveal with his son being in on it. You know, if you put that on paper, like stories like that have been told before. That's not like, but it's just the way it's told and constructed just has the viewer head faked, looking over to the left, and when they finally swing you over to the right for the reveal, it's one where I remember the first time wanting to, if I'd been in a theater, which I couldn't be because they didn't release it in theaters, I feel like it's one where the whole audience would have started clapping, like, okay. Totally. Like, it feels like a magician's trick. We're like, I gotcha. That's a lot of fun. So it loses a little bit on the rewatch because you already know that part is coming. But, you know, this is probably the 10th time I've watched this film. Like, you do still, you have a greater appreciation for the craft of like the ground that they're laying before you get there, even if you already know what the actual twist is going to be on the other side.
And also the kid also really sells it. Like
he's really good, sinister.
He's really good at being super fucking annoying when he needs to be super fucking annoying. But then the second they get down there and you realize he's not dead, the smile that crosses his face is actually some of the best child acting I've seen in anything in a while.
He's way into it.
Yeah. Well, we got a few more stories to get through, and we'll talk about how they all connect with one another in just a moment. But first, we got to take a quick break. So we will be right back. All right, we are back. And I think the next one here is probably the most complicated of all of them because it requires on some deep lore for this town in Ohio that has to be told kind of in the middle of it so that you sort of understand what's about to happen. But this is the school bus Halloween massacre, which ties into a number of kids in the modern day that are trick-or-treating, and they are bringing this girl, Rhonda, a kid who absolutely loves Halloween, so you know she's not going to die. She loves the holiday with the proper respect. You know she's making it out of this.
The Halloween respecter has logged on.
Absolutely. And these kids are absolutely planning on playing a terrible prank on her, though they don't really allude to that initially. But they are bringing her out to the old quarry. And the reason they are doing this is because there is a legend, a story about the town from 30 years prior, where a number of children, a number of special needs children, were essentially murdered, partially by their own parents, but also by a bus driver who had been contracted to take what they call challenging children out of the mix and basically just kill them by driving this bus into a flooded quarry.
The driver was never heard from again. As for the bus, some say it sank so deep that it couldn't be found. Others say the town just didn't want it to be found. For all we know, it's still down there. And so are those kids.
You are so full of shit.
Really? Well, then I guess you won't mind being first.
First what?
8 victims, 8 jack-o'-lanterns. Each one representing a lost soul. So, we're going to leave them by the side of the lake as an offering to those who died.
Oh.
This is some pretty good urban legend building.
Yeah.
We don't know what happened and now this place is haunted. Like, killing kids, especially kids that are unwanted or special needs kids, and like trying to get away with it definitely is a setup for revenge, right? Like you some haunting will happen now because you have done this, and it's got the bad parents, it's got this bus driver who's in on it. It's got all the pieces of like the of a revenge, ghostly revenge stew. So like, okay on them. I'm up for it.
Yeah. I think the thing is they walk a very razor thin line as far as like, are you just exploiting these sort of special needs kids as victims? And are you like, how are you portraying this? What are you doing with this? Are framing it can be tough, but I feel like they are doing a pretty good job here of not being super shitty and exploitative about like the legend story here.
Yeah, and I don't think necessarily. I think you're absolutely right there. It feels like they're showing a bit of respect in terms of their portrayal here. Like they don't go too far out of their way to go comical.
They're not going cartoonish with it, which I think is good. And so the costume designs I think they are using for the kids on the bus are actually based on some real world photographs that the director had seen of some photographer who had gone through and gone to either a special needs school or a hospital or something. And these were like costumes that they had made themselves. So those designs are based on costumes from those photographs.
Yeah, I think it makes the whole thing a little more like the parents and the town, the villain, right? That, I think that adds to like these are very vulnerable kids that you are now just trying to get rid of your problem. Of course, they're going to come back and murder you.
And it's a true thing in America. Like for a long stretch there, kids that had, you know, developmental issues, mental issues were often just either shoved into special schools or sanatoriums or what have you. It's one of those things that like, yeah, you can mine it for some deep lore in America because America used to treat those people like absolute fucking garbage.
It's got that nugget of truth that makes an urban legend pretty good.
Yeah. And I think the setup, you know, maybe the story setup goes on maybe just a touch too long, but otherwise I feel like it finally gets where it needs to once they start, you know, elevatoring down to the quarry. And I actually think the first fake out in this is really good. When the first three kids go down there, they're like, sorry, only three can fit in the elevator. You two, Rhonda, and the other kid will have to wait. And then when they go down in the elevator, like, you see the jack-o'-lanterns that the other kids that are down there start going out one by one as they scream.
Yeah.
And it's just like a really good setup and fake out for that little prank they're doing.
And the bus is really there.
Yeah. And just stick it out the wrong way, actually. I'm not sure why it's like that, but
it's been a while. It's been a while in the quarry. But yes. The bus is truly there. So like that's frightening on its own.
It's a great little piece of set design, honestly. Like just the way the bus is jutting out, the deep fog around everything.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. And then, you know, the reveal is made.
Macy, we have to get out of here.
Calm down.
We have to go.
Look, Macy.
Listen to me. We heard voices. There are other people here.
What is that?
And I think the way that the segment frames it where everything else is in universe.
Right.
And this is the only real instance in which we are sort of brought out and then like put it, there's an air of authenticity to like, hey, this part of the story, like this part's true.
Yeah.
And then that leads to a lot. Like, again, it's like really good fun setup. It's like the audience has a ton of information about what is probably going to happen that the people were watching are going to discover over the course of the segment. But it's a, like, if done poorly, and yes, it's also a little longer than it probably needs to be. And actually, I think stuff like this is indicative of my worry of where any sequel would go.
Right.
Like, any sequel is going to get obsessed with backstory and lore.
Creating more
and
lore
explaining,
and folding itself in on itself and all that.
Right. We got to explain more of the town. We got to explain more of Sam. And it's like, is Sam really that much more interesting?
Is this town actually a nexus point or a ley line or something
where
all Halloween converges? Like, what are we doing?
Just weird stuff happens. Yeah. But I do think here they do. It's really fun because you just, the moment the kids enter the quarry, obviously you're watching a horror anthology, like, you know, bad things are going to happen, but like they've set you up with a bunch of like a loaded gun that you're just waiting for the segment to start firing off in a way that is really satisfying. And also, it's the like really the only segment that sets up like a sympathetic character.
Yeah.
Right. Like there are people who are sort of innocents caught in random acts of Halloween violence.
Malfeasance.
But this one. Yeah. Like a lot of trick or treat is like bad stuff's out there. And sometimes you might walk out the door and it'll be right in front of you. Like the wife at the beginning does not deserve to be like hung up and strung because of what she does. But that's the movie's sort of sinister tone that it's kind of it's like it's indiscriminate violence. Like it's just bad things are lurking in the shadows and you might be the one that steps in front of it. But here it has that, but also is one of the few times where it sets up like, but also this girl, we like her, and yeah, we're gonna let something good happen to her.
Keep your jack-o'-lantern lit. It's that easy. You'll be okay.
Don't disrespect Halloween.
That's it. That's all you need to do. I'm a superstitious person. The lantern stays lit.
Yeah.
For a week. until the squirrels eat
the. I mean,
eyes
technically,
out.
Day of the Dead is after Halloween, so you really should just keep that stuff up for at least one more day.
Just keep
right?
going.
Yeah. But, you know, I think the turn with the teens, I think they do a pretty good job with it. Like, the older boy is, like, a little sympathetic and is like, maybe we shouldn't have done this, you know, whatever. But that's not going to absolve him in the end. And, you know, we did just see a kid's head on a plate, like, maybe 20 minutes before this. So, you know, everything's on the table. These kids could die extremely horribly. And the thing is, we don't really see it. But we have an idea of just how horribly these kids die once the ghosts of these bus children start emerging and start dragging them off to their death.
No! Wanda, look at me!
What are you doing?
It's not a trick. It's real. Go back!
Where's she going?
So my question for you is that Rhonda, who's the one who makes it out, who loves Halloween, does she know she's leaving them to their death at the end, or does she think they're still being 100%. She's still being messed with? Okay,
yeah, just no, I think she's pretty confident in the fate that she is leaving. Maybe not exactly which limb is going to come off first, but like pretty solid a conclusion about what's about to occur.
Okay, F you guys, we're out of here.
I think from the moment that girl with the chains gets dragged off, everyone there knows exactly what's about to happen to them.
Okay, so you don't think she's still like, you guys are still messing with me. I'm not falling for it anymore. Okay.
No, I think she's just bitter because they played a really mean prank on her, to be fair. And she broke her glasses, and also she believes in the power of Halloween, so she's like, if these ghosts want these fucking kids, have fun.
By all
means. And it sounds like they do, based on the screams you hear from down in the quarry.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing that this anthology does is, you know, it features children.
Horror. And kills them more, maybe, than they actually kill adults.
Yeah, and I don't think it's, like, it's not one of those movies where, like, hey, like, if you're a parent or you're sensitive to depictions of, like, you know, violence or whatever related, like, just depictions of children in films, like, upsets you, like, I don't think this one like sets off like red flag. I would let someone know like, hey, there's kids, stuff happens to them, but it's not Speak No Evil. As Brad recommended to Vinny, that's on the other side of that one. But it does leverage your expectation as the audience that generally speaking, kids are safe. And generally speaking, kids will kind of get away or it'll happen off screen. And again, I don't think it's gratuitous or particularly exploitative, and it's not that upsetting, but it does, I think, it understands for the audience member, like, well, usually these people are off limits, and it even with the depiction of Sam as, like, kind of a child, is like, I think part of the film's understanding of the rules of horror, and then plays with your expectations of, like, who's on the table throughout the segment.
I will say for my part, I was more upset about never finding out what happened to the dog than I was any of the kid violence, but that might just be me.
That's a good point.
Mm. Yeah. Let's just say Spike the dog ran off and found a new owner.
made it somewhere.
And definitely not his blood smeared all over that wall.
No, he's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
I think Rhonda she sees Sam right at the end of that one.
And they just kind of walk past each other in the night. She's got her little cart. He's got his burlap sack. They kind of give each other the nod of, murder, huh? Okay, bye. And they're off.
Yeah, like Sam was coming to finish the job, and he's like, looks like you got this one. Yeah, hey, pound it, Rhonda. Like, thanks for saving me a job.
You
got to
team up next year.
was it a game respect game? You got this. Celebrate Halloween? Of course. All right.
Yeah, in modern era, they'd be doing the jersey swap at the end.
Signing each other's.
Yep, signing each other's footy pajamas. So the next one is one that you kind of see peppered more throughout this one before it finally winds to its conclusion, because there's a couple different aspects of it. But the main one is Anna Paquin, her cadre of sisters, you know, you kind of think maybe, oh, she's talking like sorority sisters or something like that at the beginning, though we learn a little bit more about what this dynamic might be later on.
Is this pre-True Blood?
This is around True Blood.
Around the start,
I think.
At least, where, she does that long stint on a show that was good for about 4 seasons, I think, before it trailed
and
off.
Then went on for several more, I think.
Yeah.
But I love Anna Paquin, and she seems to be having fun in this, and her co-stars in this bit are also having a lot of fun. They're teasing with the whole, like, you know, girls losing their virginity, you know, kind of they have some sort of weird tradition going on here. They're having some kind of party out in the woods.
Your problem is simple. You always wait for them to come to you. If you just tried a little harder, you wouldn't be a virgin at 22.
What? Excuse me?
It's practically stapled to your forehead.
Oh!
Lori, please do not listen to them, okay? The key thing is to just be yourself.
Being myself hasn't gotten me very far. Maybe I'm too old-fashioned, but I've always wanted my first time to
be please don't say it.
Special.
Honey, listen. We've all been there, but you can't hesitate. Watch. That's some big equipment you've got there.
Thank you.
I'm Maria. This is Janet. And we have a small problem.
Really?
We've got this great party to go to. But we don't have any dates.
They managed to rope a guy from a Spirit Halloween to go out there and a few other people. But then there's also this bit as they are in the parade. There's this vampire, quote unquote, going around. At one point, he literally just drains the blood and bites the neck of some random woman, killing her. It is literally just that bit from the end of Vampire's Kiss. He's got fake teeth in there and just drains her. And later on, as the whole thing is Anna Paquin has to find a date for this party.
Mm-hmm.
And she is having some trouble because she has never had to do this before. And then finally, as she is wandering her way toward the woods, she is happened upon by her masked vampire friend who descends upon her and bites her. And as they're, you know, throughout the night, she's checking in through the party. And then toward the end of this bit, her grand entrance is a body flying through the air and down into the ground, into the cadre of people at the party. It is wearing her Little Red Riding Hood outfit. Again, Little Red Riding Hood. We are really teasing what's coming up here. But it's not her in it. It's the vampire who, when they take off the mask, it's the Dylan Baker principal.
Dun, dun, dun.
This was his date for the night, was going out and vampiring people?
Like I said, dude's got a lot of free time somehow. You know?
Yeah. But also, like, what is... Okay, this guy's a serial killer. What's his MO?
Like, what's it, like, how do you find this guy? He just kills everybody?
What's his FBI profile? Yeah. Like, what is he doing?
Halloween stuff.
But, like, he's a vampire, but also he's stabbing kids, but also he's beheading them and turning them into jack-o'-lanterns. Like, pick a lane, dude.
Maybe he's trying to figure out that lane.
He said his wife died, right? And so maybe this is his coping mechanism after the fact. It's like, well, I do want to become some sort of serial killer, but, like, how would I profile myself? What's my bit? What's going to get in the news? And maybe he's doing, like, you know, this is, like, you know, early-ish internet, and so he's not sure what's going to go viral. And so he's like trying out different ones to see what.
Apparently,
sticks.
This town doesn't give a shit about anything.
No.
So he's got to escalate constantly, like, you know, being like, maybe this vampire thing. Maybe if I dress up like Ezio and go like vampire people, maybe that'll be the thing.
But I think he's trying on different serial killer personas the way like a 13-year-old tries on different personalities. Like, it's just not. It doesn't feel like he's nailed it yet. And well, he's never going to get to, unfortunately, or fortunately. Because, he's been fucked up by Anna Paquin, and we don't really know exactly what way she fucked him up until she comes sauntering in. Patrick, I'm just going to bring this brief note up for you here, because I think you're the only other person on this podcast who might have seen this movie.
Hit me.
You ever seen the movie 13 Ghosts?
Oh, of course I saw 13. There was an era of, House of Wax remake. That was a very specific era of House on Haunted Hill remake was also that. That era,
which is
so
better than 13 Ghosts is by a pretty wide margin. But
13 Ghosts is not the one with Tony Shalhoub, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I've seen that
it's
too.
Got good
okay,
effects.
You have seen that.
13 Ghosts has some really good ghost effects.
Yeah, that's the best part of it. 100%. Set design and special effects, what that movie has.
Yes.
The other thing it has is a giant adult baby ghost, and the man who is playing the giant adult baby at this party is the same actor.
Oh, look at that.
I don't remember the adult baby. Is he the...
It's the mother and the son. They're like a pair of ghosts that go together, I guess. And it's just a giant adult baby man. And anyway, he's apparently wearing a similar costume in this. I assume because at some point Dougherty saw that movie and was like, that'd be really funny.
What's your name, honey?
It's Stephen.
Stephen?
Stephen Wilkins.
I'm glad you're here first. I really am. I like you.
Who are you people?
But yes, what we learn is that it is not really about sex for these girls. It is about devouring men whole, because as Dylan Baker looks around his surroundings, he finds a pile of dead men who have been bloodied in various ways. And as Anna Paquin mounts him, she begins to transform into a goddamn werewolf.
Okay, so I've seen a lot of werewolf transformations, probably not as many as you guys have seen, you know, but I have seen a American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, well, you've seen the best, like, arguably the best one, yeah.
Yeah, they don't get much better than that.
But this taking of skin off is also, now this is kind of cornier and, like, it's not done in such a gruesome way, but it's, like, in a concept is pretty good, because they are just ripping their skin off to let the, at first I was kind of confused as to what the hell is going on, but all the ladies start ripping their skin off to let their inner wolf out.
Yeah, it's not Hellraiser. Like,
no.
It's more like when they peel off their, like, arm skin, it's like when you take off one of those fake tattoo sleeves, you know? It's not, it's pretty rubbery and not that bloody, but it does beg the question of, like, are they wearing skin suits, or is this just part of their transformation? Because when Anna Paquin does it, she doesn't really tear her skin off. Like, no. She starts morphing within the skin.
It kind of bursts out a little more.
Good point. Yeah, but it's really unique, right? Like, I think part of why, and it holds up exceptionally well, because so much of the effects feel, you know, it's impossible to tell, like, what little bits of, you know, CG are aiding the practical stuff that you're seeing on set. But, I mean, it's 2024, and, like, I don't, at the end of the day, I don't see the seams. Like, it still looks like really.
I mean, that's a wolf puppet.
Well, I mean, that's my favorite.
But it's a pretty good one.
It's a pretty good one. And I mean, there's all these, like, really inventive, like, one-off shots. Like, there's the, like, one of the, what, someone takes their nail and, like, runs it down the back of one of the other characters to kind of unzip it. And I'm like, it's clearly people who have seen a werewolf transformation before and then racking their brains to find out some different way to do it. And even the way it is done, I do think, is also in the spirit of everything that happens in the lead up to the sequence, which is just like twist, 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 like, gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. And then even as the transformation is happening, you're like, this isn't even like how I would anticipate that. Like, all of it feels very inventive and surprising in a way that is just meant to kind of make you feel. A werewolf is not a new villain, but at least they're giving you something new to look at while it's all happening.
A different flavor of it, yeah.
But I think the, you know, having not seen this before, you're totally right. The transformation is novel, but I was completely expecting them to be vampires, because it's always sexy vampires. It's always, you know, female sexy vampires. It's always big burly dudes are the wolf, are the werewolves, right?
And I think it's been like witches or demons or something like that. Yeah,
but not werewolves. Kind of, like, that's your. If you were to, I think if you were to stop most people watching the film before the turn happens, like, all right, we're about to learn what the what's going on here. Like, give me your top three guesses. I don't think werewolves is on that top.
No, it's always again, like the bro pack, right? It's always the boys are the werewolves.
But the little Red Riding Hood thing is actually the biggest fucking red flag of like, this is exactly what we're doing as soon as you realize what it is. But I will say the thing about werewolf fiction is that a lot of it is actually fairly bad. And the main thing you remember about just about every werewolf movie that sticks in memory is the transformation. Mm. That is always the thing that sticks out. Is this an interesting or a grotesque transformation?
Dog
or is it
soldiers,
just kind of boring?
Alex Navarro.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a movie. You're right. But my point is that, like, they came up with a novel way to do it, you know? Yes. And obviously werewolves are not the main characters here, but it's like, it's for a bit in this movie, it's more inventive than maybe for a throwaway transformation gag you would expect.
It seems like this whole end sequence here is a percentage of their budget for this movie. They put they were like, we're doing this, and we're doing this the way I want to do it. And if we have to make sacrifices in other places, so be it. But this one, we're going to do this. Because the rest of them,
there's really only one more at this point.
Yeah. And there's a lot of cutaways for the things that are, you'd be like, oh, and then it's like a hand flopping on the ground or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like this kind of indulges in the, like you said, Patrick, you know, the skin coming off, like the nail going down and all of that.
It's the closest
also
it
the
has
pile
to
of
a...
mutilated bodies.
It's the closest it has to a set piece or a spectacle.
Yeah.
Like, there are, like, events that occur in the other segments, but this is the closest to, like, like, money on the screen, even if it's still a low amount of money all told. But, like, you can tell this is, I think you're right, this is one of those, like, whatever budget we have goes into this, and every other corner we have to cut will happen as a result.
This movie apparently had a $12 million budget, which I was actually a little bit surprised by, because I'm not that it looks cheap or anything, but I was just like, wow, okay, they actually did throw some money into this thing. And based on its current box office number on Wikipedia, it made about a 100th percentile of that. It's made like 27,000 at the box office.
Wait, 1,000?
Yes.
But then again, at the box office.
At the box office. Oh, it has sold a lot of copies on DVD and Blu-ray.
The merch, has been huge for years.
It has made money, just not at the box office.
Got it. And that's probably U.S. box office as well, right?
Yeah. And this brings us to our final big segment here, which is the Brian Cox segment as Mr. Krieg, a cantankerous old man who lives next to the principal, who is now dead, by the way. We don't really know much about his character until the very end and like kind of what his tie into the rest of the lore here is here. But otherwise, he's just a crank and an asshole and the sort of old man that just about every small town has, a guy who is a total loner, barely takes care of his house, and doesn't want anyone on his goddamn property. So when kids come trick-or-treating, he scares them off with his dog. And I will say, a funny way, he puts a weird little demon mask on his dog, and that scares them off. That's not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah. And so he's a loner. He's burning photographs, as one does on Halloween night. and he is visited by another presence, which is our friend Sam, who we have only really kind of seen since the beginning of the movie. We haven't really seen him do much other than just appear in scenes and just kind of be around. Like the ashtray in Creepshow. And here, he's in the backyard when Mr. Krieg is yelling at the principal.
I've got an NRA membership in my pocket and a shotgun over the fireplace. So get out of here before I...
It's me, Mr. Krieg. Stephen Wilkins.
What in God's name are you doing down there, Wilkins? Huh? Hiding bodies? Well, fix it. It stinks like a dead whore out here.
I'm trying.
Get your kid out of my yard! Goddamn freak.
And when he goes back inside, it seems like something skitters in through the old pet door.
Yeah.
And his dog goes running after it after it goes upstairs in his house. And then we don't really hear from the dog again after that.
Well, because it got away.
Yeah, it got away.
It went out the doggy door.
Yeah. Found a very nice owner. and when Mr. Krieg stalks his way up there with his double barrel shotgun, because this man has not bought a single piece of technology since 1958, he goes up there and he finds on his wall of his bedroom blood smears everywhere with words like trick or treat and give me something to eat and all of that. And then Sam starts trying to murder him.
Yeah, in a little, sometimes a little Home Alone-ish way, sometimes in more, well, Home Alone's pretty violent, more or less violent ways.
A little bit of a Pet Cemetery in there, too, where he just straight up cuts that dude's Achilles tendon at one point from under the bed.
Yeah. It's quick, though. It's not quite as, I don't know, for some reason that Pet Cemetery one really stuck with me.
They show you that one way more than this one does.
Yeah. This one is a little, like, quicker, and he just hits the deck, right? Like, he's just on the ground.
Why does Achilles tendon horror hit me so much harder than just about any other part of the body? I don't know why.
There's something about the it's like, right there, you know? Because it's, your Achilles tendon is just right there waiting for it to spring out of, you know, it's just, I don't even want to talk about it. It's just, yes.
Yeah. Tons of dead kids, no big deal. Achilles tendon, I don't like it.
You can't. That seems really hard to fix.
Yeah. I can just feel like flapping up like a drape, you know, as soon as you cut it.
Gross. Stop.
I also think this is the first time I've watched Trick or Treat since watching Succession. And obviously Brian Cox has been in many things, but like having watched Succession and then coming back to watch this just makes it like all the more delicious. Revisiting him in playing a very, like, he kind of has a type. Like, there's a
certain,
not that he can't
cranky
like,
old men of different flavors.
Yep, and he does it well, and he does it here, and it's part of actually like he. There are many good character actors, like in like that's a often staple of a lot of horror anthologies are like these kinds of character actors will show up here, but they also they do a lot of work to like elevate the material. Like you could have gotten anybody in this role, and like maybe the effects and the setup you still end up going a long way. But having Brian Cox in the role just sells it in a way that would be lesser with a lesser actor.
Totally. And he's a great actor. And I mean, you know, he has a horror pedigree. Again, he was the original Hannibal Lecter.
Yep.
In Manhunter. So like he's done this kind of stuff before. And I think he's good. I mean, he's not really menacing here. He's just a crank for the most part. But he sells the fear of being stalked by what appears to be a child in a burlap sack, like, pretty well. Like, as weird as that is, he's going for it in a way that I think works very well.
I also like that Brian Cox's character in this is not sniveling, or he's, like, unrepentant. Like, he is like, I'm gonna go down swinging through all this, at least until the end.
Yeah.
And he's gonna try and take on Sam and see who wins.
Yeah, and, you know, he does eventually, after, you know, Sam chases him around and knocks him around a couple more times, he does finally manage to get a straight-up headshot on that thing, which sends it flying into the wall, at which point he then shoots it a couple more times just to be sure, and then you get the classic bit of going to call 911, but then something unplugged the phone.
911, please. Hello? Hello? I'd like to report. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
It's Thing.
It's a well shot hand skidding around, always slightly wrist off camera. I think probably worth mentioning the part where he has landed in a pile of razor blades after falling down the steps, which was
like razor blades and broken glass, right?
And that's pretty gnarly because his hands are all done up pretty well there. He's
not having a good time.
No,
with this thing.
He's pretty beat up by the time we get to this point with the hand scurrying around.
And you get that good little bit where the hand sort of crawls back to the body and starts like nudging it, being like, hey, it's time to reattach. Hey,
we got stuff to do.
I also really like the effect of like all his innards being pumpkin innards. Like every time they shoot him, it's like pumpkin juice just splays out of him.
Well, and it's great because I think it's part of what makes all of this work is like it understands, like, especially if you watched a lot of this stuff before, like Brian Cox's character nailing the shot. But then nailing the shot three more times is itself sort of understanding the trope, which is so many of these like horrors, like, all right, so you got to like go cut off the head, like just do it. And he says, I understand the assignment. I'm going to shoot him like four times to make sure he's dead. And so it's like understands what the audience is expecting, pushes back on that, and then finds a very funny way to skirt around it anyway, because it can make up the rules as it goes along. And it just makes it all the more delightful.
And I really like his, like, again, Sam's primary weapon being an X-Acto knife inside a candy bar. Like, that is a very good little touch.
Yeah, the razor blade in the candy bar is, like, very 90s fear-mongering.
Yeah. And, you know, he's gonna kill this guy. Like, he's getting ready to do it. He's bit a big piece out of his lollipop, and he's gonna fucking stab this dude in the chest. But he, by the hair... he manages to stab a candy bar that is resting on the man's chest, and then he picks that up and is like, oh, it's like I trick-or-treated. You're good.
Yeah. I got my candy. You did the treat.
You did the thing you were supposed to do. You learned your lesson, so I'm not going to murder you this time.
You respect Halloween.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. Like, as much as you ever will.
I'm here to teach lessons, and looks like you've learned. Good mm-hmm. job, Brian Cox.
And so he scurries off into the night, and Brian Cox is left to, I guess, bandage himself. He just had that sling lying around. And when kids start coming to the door after that, he is more than happy to give them giant fistfuls of peppermint candies, because that is it's like that in Werther's Originals. That dude definitely has nothing else in the house.
Do not sully a Werther's Original next to a peppermint candy. That is,
you gotta get peppermint.
Oh, peppermint candies, that's something you just get a fistful at the diner. Those things are just free. A Werther's is like, that's much
better. Well, he's
not
giving those out, though. He's not giving the Werther's out. He's giving the peppermint
candy. Might as well just give pennies at that point.
Peppermint candy is delicious. It does not belong on Halloween. That's my only argument.
Oh, so gross. That and, like, sprees, those, like, tubes of sprees. Like, those just...
Yeah, you don't give those out for Halloween either.
Ugh, gross.
All right, well,
this is why I'm not a Halloween person. This is why...
It's not a Halloween candy!
This is why, like, I get excited when my kids come home and they're like, Dad, I got a bag of Doritos. I'm like, hell yeah! That's...
I'll eat that.
Who's giving those out? Yeah.
Let me it's not for you, right, Vinny?
Let me just go get a costume on real quick.
I'll go get a sheet. I love the classic ghost.
Yeah.
Nobody does this anymore.
You're an adult. You can just go buy a bag of Doritos anytime you want.
Is it the Fritos variety pack? Because I'll go back there a couple of times.
Well.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Yeah. He may have learned his lesson, but he is not safe. Because after a few kids come by and Sam sort of looks him off and is like, all right, you're doing your job. You're doing what you're supposed to do. He's visited by another cadre of children.
This was a good tie back around. I don't think I necessarily saw this one coming until the very end here.
I feel like I should have, but you're right. The very first time I watched this, I did not.
Because I think, once I realized that they're tying it all in.
Yeah, but right before you see who the last trick-or-treaters are, you see one of the photos that is being burned in his fireplace, and is a photo of him next to all the children from the bus, and him is, in fact, the bus driver.
Yeah.
And so when he opens that door, who is waiting for him but a bunch of very soggy ghosts that want to kill the shit out of him?
Yeah, we assume he goes out in a pretty violent way.
You hear the yelp.
Yeah. Oh!
They got some practice with the kids down in the corner, right? So they know, like, oh, it's been a while, guys. Like, how do you want to handle this one? Like a nice exhibition game before the big championship.
You think them like killing the kids was their opportunity to escape? You think like the kids down there allowed them, or this is just all happy coincidence?
Sam went down there in the elevator and he was like, "Oh shit, you thought that was fun? You got to come with me to town because it is a fucking mess up there. Let's get nuts."
There's this one guy, he hates Halloween. He just hates Halloween. Let's go.
Wait, what's that guy's name?
I don't know, but he drives a bus. He's a really bad bus driver.
Oh, we gotta meet him.
Yeah, so he gets got, and
then it wraps back around to that first story where we see Sam watching that couple come home and then realize, I think I've got someone else to murder.
Doesn't respect Halloween.
Nope. And that's our movie.
Yeah.
Vinny?
Yeah.
Final thoughts.
I think it's a fun Halloween movie. I think I'd say... Maybe as a horror movie, it's a little lower on my list. As a Halloween movie, it's probably a little higher because it's a fun Halloween movie. And again, I do like the idea that we should respect these traditions, especially Halloween, which seems to be so. I don't want to get too much on a tangent here, but just, you know, given where things are with it's this weird Christian thing that is also like mixed in with non-Christian beliefs, right? Like
Christianity. Yeah, I mean, it's like a Celtic thing originally.
Yeah, so like much like all the other things that was just absorbed by Christianity to become part of it, this feels like no, I don't know. No, we got to keep this one a little separate. We'll keep the like All Saints Day just enough separation there where like maybe honoring the ghost and the dead and the other stuff there and like keeping the hellish stuff over there, it's kind of important. So I always kind of like, there's something about that I like, and that's probably because I was brought up Catholic and it's just like, oh yeah. Oh no, don't fuck around with the spirits. Like you gotta, and other people's spirit stuff. There's no God is going to save you on this night. I think that's what it is. Like it's kind of like their night. It's their time for this time. And this does a pretty good job of bringing that back in and being like, now you can do all you want. You respect the tradition.
Yeah. Like, to me, this feels like a Halloween movie in the way that, like, a lot of mainstream Christmas comedies are Christmas movies. You know, like, sure. It's that sort of, like, we are using the holiday as a backdrop for something. We are talking about traditions and all that kind of stuff, but we are also doing this kind of, like, you know, we're creating a little fable around this holiday. And I think this one's very successful at doing that kind of thing. Like, it is not a movie that I think plays well outside of the Halloween month. But as a Halloween thing, like, it's basically just taking the Great Pumpkin and making it menacing, you know?
Patrick, this is like one of your faves?
Yeah, it's a Halloween tradition movie for us, right? Mm-hmm. So it's what we watch. Maybe not these days, you know, we're pretty involved with the kids on Halloween day. Yeah. But like sometime during the last week of October, it may not be that we sit down and watch it like front to back. But once a year, towards the end of the month, it will be on, maybe while we're doing something else. The movie's actually not over-the-top violent or scary enough. Like, when we did, like, pumpkin carving, I think we had it on in the background. And occasionally, like, the kids look over and like, what's going on in that movie? Nah, don't worry about it. You know what I mean?
That kid's head.
And so it's one of the, you're, I think, precisely right, Alex. Like, it's like a comfort movie. It's one of those that I don't need to watch Wire to Wire, but I just want to experience a flavor of it. Like, and it'll just be on in the house once a year towards the end of the month. And Vinny, I cannot, maybe you all should just experience this movie towards the holiday season, but the thing you've gotten hung up on, like respecting tradition and opening the door for something horrible to happen in which no God will save you.
Yeah.
This director's follow-up to this is thematically anyway, I don't know if it actually follows in the chronology, but is a Christmas movie called Krampus, which is incredibly mean spirited. Like it is,
but fun mean spirited.
It's fun. Yeah. It takes this mean streak, dials it up, and it ends up feeling harsher because it's explicitly a joyous holiday like Christmas, but adopts a very similar emotional framework of there are rules to follow, and when you don't follow, there are consequences, and the consequences of Krampus are very upsetting, and it has one of my favorite horror movie endings. The ending is mean, I guess is what I will say.
No, that's fine.
I don't want to say anything more, but if you found yourself tickled by that part, this director like follows that thematically and puts it into a different holiday. Cool. Awesome Adam Scott performance. Toni Collette's in the movie. Like it's
Toni Collette is really fun in that movie.
And I really like Toni Collette. So like just to clarify, there's something about old school holidays and traditions before the hallmarkification of them, before they became back when they were scary. Back when it was like,
well, there's an urban legend almost attached to the holiday that we've forgotten because we've commercialized and commoditized it.
Yeah.
And it's like if you scratch away at a holiday long enough, underneath Santa Claus is Krampus.
Totally. You've sanded all the edges off and like you've made it so that you can sell it and everybody's like joy and whatever. And it's not about like, oh no, it's because if you didn't do this thing, you would die, you know, or like, it's because if you didn't do this thing, mysterious stuff was happening and people would just disappear and we could blame it on this holiday or this thing. And like, it's super important that you do this thing, but now it's all like, you know, you're not going to sell that in a Hallmark. That's not fun. You're not going to be like, happy Halloween, I hope you don't die mysteriously. You know, like,
Wait, and, should I not be saying that when kids trick or treat?
right.
Maybe that's like, why no one came to my door last year.
And like, you know, people getting in trouble. Like, there's a lot of mischief that could be had. But like, I still believe there should be some mischief to be had on a Halloween. Not necessarily don't want my car to get egged, but.
But if it does, that's.
But if you can get away with it, you can get away with it. You know, like,
I'm not gonna hunt you down.
I'm not gonna necessarily. I will try to make you not get away with it. I will sit in a rocking chair on my porch and be like,
with a shotgun.
I know what you're up to.
Okay, so speaking of, you can weigh in on how I handled this. I don't think I've told you the story before, but so we have a high schooler in one of the houses next to us, and they've been totally like fine, like haven't caused like any problems. But you know, classic like. A teen boy, like, you look over, there's like 9 cars at the house. Like, we don't think they've thrown a party yet, and I'm preparing myself for like, what am I supposed to do if they do throw a party? Like, I don't want to know. Like, I did that shit when I was a kid. Like, as long as everyone's being responsible, I really don't care if you get drunk in your parents' house. But anyway, we get a camera, you know, like that faces out from our garage. And over the summer, at one point, I was sitting playing a video game upstairs. And I heard some fireworks go off and went out and like saw like a car squealing away. And then like an hour later, they did it again. And mostly I was like annoyed, like, please don't wake up the kids. Like, I don't want to have to deal with that and put them back to sleep. And this went on for like two or three nights in a row. And I got it all on camera. Like, it's all like I sat there and I looked at it and went, what do I do with this? I was like, you know what?
Are they throwing them at your house?
No, they're throwing it in the driveway of, like, it's clearly the friends of the neighbor kid. But this is happening like 11th. Like, it's not like 8:30. No, it's like 11:30. Like, everyone's asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't hot enough that you'd expect that the windows are closed. You're going to expect that most people have their windows open, which I'm sure they know. That's why they're throwing the fireworks, so that they'll wake somebody up. And I resisted the urge to do anything with it. I, like, saved the clip onto my phone. I was like, if this becomes a pattern over the next month, then maybe I'll do something with it. But otherwise, I'm gonna let this one go. Like, you should allow
you
should
talk
be allowed to,
the kid?
To be. No, I would have told the mom. Like, I was
mom,
like, hey,
okay.
Like, I'm sure. My guess is you know which dirtbag. Like, most parents know which dirtbag friends might be the ones that would do something like this.
You would think so,
So I was like, I'll just go tell her, and she can deal with it. I'm not gonna like anonymously send a Dropbox links to the police with like, if you zoom in close enough, you can see the.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was one of the first moments I had as like an adult, like, did all sorts of dumb shit as a kid, and I was like, huh, how am I supposed to feel about this? When do I push back on this? Where it's being annoying. It's like, well, no one woke up. No one complained about it in the morning. I think I got to let this one go. This is just my version of eggs on the car. Like, you should be able to do some dumb shit. And just because there's cameras everywhere now,
that's
doesn't
right.
mean immediately that you get in trouble with it because I saw
Look,
it.
At least it didn't blow up your mailbox. At least you don't have to do a bunch of cleaning the next morning. You know?
No, it was safe. It wasn't even on my yard, but I just noticed it. It was like, uh-oh, I'm reaching the age where I could get cranky about this if I wanted to.
The one thing I'll just add to that very quickly is you gotta be smarter, kids. There are cameras everywhere, and if you're gonna do it, the thing is you can't get caught. Like,
the mischief has not kept up with the technology.
Totally. No. We did a bunch of real nasty stuff when we were kids, but you know, when you got caught, right? Like, you got caught, and like, that was bad news, and you had to. Don't get caught. Now, I'm not saying you run around shooting out all the cameras with a BB gun or something, but like,
no. You don't got to do that. Just make sure your license plate isn't anywhere visible and wear a mask. That's
like
it.
Ours is like, our camera is like, I'm not trying to be secretive about it. Like, it's in a very obvious spot.
Totally.
Mostly, I never check intruders. Don't listen to this. I don't check the footage. Like, it's there to be a deterrent, like a, you know, dog, like, beware of dog sign. It's like, the camera's there to be like, there's a camera here.
Or to go back in if you ever need to,
yes,
right?
And I have done that. But yeah, it's mostly there as a deterrent. So most of these cameras they're going to be on the front door. They're going to be in the corner, like, of the garage. Like, be smart. Mm-hmm. Then throw your fireworks.
I told my kids,
I said, whenever you go to a friend's house and you're with your friends, as soon as you get within porch distance, you stop talking about that friend. Because they all have Ring cameras, and they could all be like, you're not like, oh, this friend's parents, they're so annoying, or like, oh, you didn't ring the door. You know, it was like, knock it off. They all have Ring cameras. Like, you have to like be aware.
It's true.
We had an incident in our incident is maybe too strong of a word, but I had come home from a family thing with another set of neighbors and their kids, and we got home early. And we were going over to their place to let the kids like run around in the backyard. And I pulled up to his house and saw a bunch of stuff, like plants and things were like knocked over. And there was a neighborhood girl who was not the most popular girl in the neighborhood, because trouble always follows her. Like, there's always something that happens, like, when she shows up. And I pull up, and they're like, hey, you know, Mr. Klupik, I don't know what happened over at this house, but, like, we showed up, and, like, in the backyard, everything's knocked over, and the front yard's everything knocked over. Like, someone must have come over and messed around. So I call. My neighbor was like, hey, I know you're, like, 5 minutes out. The kids, including you-know-who, is... They're making some claims. I was like, I know you have cameras in your front and back. So just letting you know they're going to spin you a yarn, and then you should probably look. And, like, sure enough, like, it was the two of them, led by this one girl, just helping themselves into the backyard, just knocking
kicking,
things
smashing
over.
The pumpkins, smashing all the jack-o'-lanterns.
And we like, know how much. That story ends.
Yeah, but they had no... And his cameras aren't hidden either. They're just... oblivious
guys,
to it. It was like
kids,
all just there. Them just like kicking
teach your
garbage
kids about,
over.
Teach your kids about the security state early. Get them.
Yeah.
we are always being watched.
We live in a society, but only barely.
But thank you guys for taking me down the trick or treat. I think this was a fun movie. I have it.
Where's
I
it on it, your ranking?
So this may make sense to you.
Uh-huh.
It is below House or House Soup.
House Soup.
And it is above Resident Evil.
What is this list?
Vinny has his
master list of everything we have done for the Watchcast that he keeps in a very specific order.
Okay.
So that is the ranking of where it is. It is number 50 actually now on the
list. Out of like 60 something, right?
Out of around 70, yeah, 69, okay. 70. Or maybe not, yeah, maybe around there. I have to go back over the list.
To be clear, we haven't done that many bad movies, Patrick. So a lot of like, it's pretty top heavy in terms of like stuff he at least enjoys.
Vinny's not as horror genre head. The fact that it ranks even there, I think, like speaks well enough to the quality of it.
And I would agree; it is better than Resident Evil.
My number one movie out of everything we watch, The Thing.
Oh, there you go. Well,
that's a classic.
Cinema. Yeah, I want to make sure I get some cred because that's kind of a horror movie.
The Thing, 2011.
It's not kind of, it is
the remake, right?
That's right. It's the 2011 version. Yeah, yeah. No, it's not. No. Of course not.
Well, actually, you know, technically the 1981 version is also a remake of another film. And
oh,
I don't know
no.
if you remember that.
No.
At one point when we did a thing about the thing, the video game, we went back and watched. I'd never seen
Another World.
The Thing from Another World. It's fun. Like it's worth
yeah, it's a fun little monster movie that wow, does it hate scientists. Holy shit. It is extremely anti-scientist.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that was the theme of the 50s. But yep, that is going to wrap us up here for Trick or Treat. I do believe Brad will be back for next week's episode.
If not, I might be back again.
Well, if not, guess what? You're watching VHS with us, Patrick. I know you won't complain about that.
I will not.
I'm pretty excited about that one. That's a found footage one, right?
It is an anthology of found footage that has now turned into several different anthologies of found footage.
Those are some of my favorite creepy things. Found footage stuff really is a genre I actually like.
Have you ever seen the movie Creep?
No, I don't think so.
Do you know the comedian Mark Duplass? I guess he's also.
I do.
Have you not seen Creep either?
I have not seen Creep. I know Mark Duplass, but I don't. I've not seen that movie.
If you looked up Mark Duplass, like you'll know him. He's been in a bunch of different things, but he plays a it's a found footage film in which he's a serial killer that holds the camera. It's really good. Like
okay,
it's not overly like violent and upsetting in my recollection. But there's two of them, Creep and Creep 2. They're both great, and
is there a mystery in it? Because I like a found footage with a mystery in it.
Yeah, it's been long enough that I can't remember what the core of it is. But the Duplass brothers did a Creep television series that airs on Shudder in November. But if you're inkling for found footage,
okay,
Creep is one that I put on my list. He wears like a really funny werewolf mask in it. It's very obviously fake, but it's
okay.
Good.
Well. As we said, VHS is up next, and then I believe we will be doing our Treehouse of Horror Best Of to end the month. That's what we have coming up. Patrick Klepek, thank you so much for joining us. Give me your plugs before I have to end this recording extremely quickly because I have to get out
That's
of the house.
That's true. You got to get out of the house. Yeah, no, you can see all my stuff over at remapradio.com. Do you want to listen to us enjoy, luxuriate in Megalopolis? That'll be up next week over there. And then I have a parenting and gaming newsletter called Crossplay over at crossplay.news.
All right. And Finny, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who has been listening, watching, and spooking along with us. We'll see you next time.